Another welcome push and a boost of energy gave me a fantastic lift and allowed me to indulge in some magnificent aerobatics. I dived down towards the ground, picking a flower in mid-flight before soaring like an eagle into the air. It was exhilarating. I could not see the kind soul who had supplied me with the lift, but I was grateful. Unfortunately, I never made it into the town. An irresistible pull made me wake up in my bed. Subheadline: Getting Around. Traveling in the fifth dimension is an art that does not necessarily come naturally when you are used to walking, driving a car or using public transport. Suddenly you are faced with endless possibilities for getting from A to B. Sometimes it is as natural as thinking, sometimes it is accompanied by effort and frustration. Next headline, Traveling Down Memory Lane. 26th of November 1976. I hadn't had an out-of-body experience for several months and I was beginning to believe that my novel way of living in an alternate universe had been sealed off. But after waking at about 3 o'clock one morning, I went back to sleep and almost immediately had a lucid dream. I can't remember what triggered it, but I found myself standing in an open area, almost derelict, a place too boring for words. I focused my attention until I achieved full waking consciousness. Because there was nothing of any interest, lacking any better ideas, I thought it would be fun to visit my mother's house in Germany again. I imagined the table in her kitchen and without delay I shot into the air and gathered speed quickly. For some reason the sensation dissolved and instead of finding myself at the desired destination, I was back at my starting point. I tried again. This time I remembered that a sure way of getting about was to utilize the feeling of desire. I wanted to be in my hometown and I remembered clearly the kitchen table and the corner bench. I visualized myself lying on the bench and staring at the edge of the table. The image was crystal clear, much more so than when visualizing it in physical life. With that I felt the powerful rush of high-speed travel and a moment later I appeared in my mother's kitchen some 800 miles away. The house was empty. So I decided to take a stroll down the familiar road to visit my hometown. I reasoned that this way of movement would be too slow and I feared I might wake up back in Bournemouth before I had taken full advantage of this relatively rare experience. I decided to take to the air. I lifted up to a level of about 20 feet and adopted a moderate running speed. I needed a certain amount of focus and concentration to maintain height and speed, but eventually I came to a halt in my aunt's old flat, which she had occupied as a refugee after the Second World War. It was a dark, damp and smelly place, just how I remembered it from my childhood. It was almost like traveling back in time. The flat was hemmed in by two houses, so hardly any light came through the window, and I remembered that the light bulb was on permanently as a result. It was very dank and depressing. It all streamed back from my childhood. 38 Even the same furniture and decorations were the old red sofa, the 1950s radio, the damp, patchy wallpaper. I knew that my aunt and her family had long moved into a comfortable brand new house with a garden, and what I was visiting was a relic from the past, a bad memory, engraved permanently and solidly into the matter of this dimension. I decided it was time to leave. Outside I lifted into the air easily but remained only just above the ground. I noticed two little girls pointing at me and chasing after me, screeching excitedly as if they had never seen anyone flying before. One of them even caught my foot, yelling and laughing. I began to feel irritated and made a determined effort to rise higher and increase my speed, which seemed to work. Aiming to return to my mother's house, I passed my old local cinema. I was intrigued that it was exactly how I remembered it from my childhood, including the old film posters as I remembered them in the display boxes with the still photographs of the movie showing currently. Curiously, I saw the head of the 50s German film star Romy Schneider, but with her head stuck perversely on a male body. I tried to read the film title on the poster so I could confirm with my brother the title of the film when I returned to my body, but it seemed to change every time I took note. Then I remembered that in reality the cinema had long been decommissioned and been turned into a supermarket. I pondered how the power of memory was able to have such a potent effect on the physical reality of this dimension. This was a world where individual memory and objective reality, if there is such a thing, had an equal claim to existence. Imagination was not discriminated against in favor of physical reality as on our waking Earth. Disconcerted by the implications of this realization, I proceeded towards the relatively safe endeavor of locating my family. As soon as I was airborne again, I spotted a woman in her early 20s walking on the opposite side of the road. I recognized her immediately. It was my mother. I rushed over to her laughing. She was extremely pleased to see me and gave me the same warm and familiar hug. We were both happy to be united, and I marveled at how young and beautiful she looked. She asked me how I was and whether Julia and I were happy together. Instead of answering her, I suddenly burst into tears with love and affection for Julia. The emotion was so powerful that I laughed and cried at the same time. The mixture of feelings of seeing my mother and experiencing the powerful bond with my wife made me sob uncontrollably. My mother smiled broadly and took me into her arms, rocking me gently from side to side, laughing softly to comfort me as she did when I was upset as a child. This powerful emotion had the dash effect of waking me up in my bed. Strangely, there was not even a trace of the emotion I had felt just a moment ago. Next headline: How Real Are People? 4th of October 1977. At this time of our lives, Julia was doing a drama course at college while I was trying to get a diploma as an art therapist. We had different schedules, which would sometimes allow me to devote extra time to meditation in the morning. When I became drowsy, I simply allowed myself to fall asleep, which tended to heighten the chances of my becoming conscious in another dimension. On one occasion, I noticed during meditation that I was on the verge of detaching myself from my body, but rather than doing that, I surrendered to the much more powerful urge of allowing myself to fall asleep. During the dreams that followed, I was aware almost constantly that I was dreaming, yet the dream images hung like treacle around my brain and I was unable to shake myself free. Finally, with a great willpower, I forced myself to examine my hands to establish clarity and full waking consciousness until my hand became distinct. Again, my hand looked rather pathetic, like the hand of a child, almost fake, but it did the trick. The heavy draining dreams had left. When I looked around, I was in a semicircular room with long windows on the round side and a long seat underneath them following the curves of the room. Then I spotted Julia, sitting there quietly, unaware of my presence and lost in thought. My initial thought was that she was an image I had projected unconsciously, because I knew that at this time she was at college and that it could not possibly have been her dream self. I couldn't resist getting closer to her, and she looked extremely beautiful, ethereal, like a being from a magical kingdom. I lifted her chin with my right hand and made her look at me. It was as if she was in a dream. I encouraged her to wake up. Instead, she became strangely anxious, so I took her in my arms and hugged her. She was extremely light to hold. I felt a powerful love and tenderness towards her. While holding her, I remembered that the previous evening she had returned from college rather late and I had had no means of contacting her to make sure she was all right. At that time, I knew very little about the phenomena I had encountered. Only many years later did I learn about artificial entities, thought forms that manifest in their shape of our emotional concerns. At that time, I didn't know what the apparition of Julia meant and knew only vaguely that she was a projection. As I learned later, artificial entities can pop up in the next dimension wherever strong directive emotions are at work that don't resolve themselves. They also populate our dreams, and they can appear very real. They are fashioned spontaneously from the extremely responsive matter of the dimension. That does not mean that they are rampant, and they are identified easily by their Grange remoteness. But they don't have to be like this, depending on the power of the person who evoked them, they can appear very real and with a will and even a personality of their own. But more about this in a later chapter. Next headline, Meeting Dreamers in a Beautiful Dream, 1st of October 1977. I woke up from a dream in my bedroom, but it was not my bedroom. I walked to the window and looked over a snowy landscape, which I thought was incongruous to this time of year. This told me instantly that I was in a dream and it catapulted me into full waking consciousness. Upon seeing me, a deer ran away from the house and disappeared into the distance, leaving tiny hoof prints behind in the snow. I climbed out of the window. Not being able to make up my mind where to go or what to do, I used the surrender technique to see whether some unknown force would take me somewhere. I was picked up immediately by a current and tossed into the air like a leaf. After a gentle ascent, I plunged back down suddenly and into the earth until it became pitch black. Although it wasn't unpleasant, I didn't like the prospect of being underground, and in an instant I found myself rising up again into a blue sky. Making a conscious effort to take charge of my destination plunged me back into the earth again, so I decided to wake up. When I opened my eyes, I was lying on a sofa. I felt I could have another try at leaving my body simply by closing my eyes again, but then I realized that neither the sofa nor the room were familiar to me at all. I was in a strange place. I had experienced what is known as a false awakening. Instead of just getting up and continuing with my out-of-body experience, I closed my eyes again, and a few seconds later, when I opened them, I was in a different room with a window. It seemed to be the right decision because I felt instantly that I was in a much higher dimension than the false awakening. When I walked to the window, I looked out into a lovingly designed summer garden bursting with magnificent, vibrantly colored flowers, some huge, as tall as a person. The greens were so soft that it sent a thrill through my whole body. Without any hesitation, I jumped through the window. Standing among the flowers on a small winding path, I felt soft warm rain falling down to earth. On closer inspection, I noticed that it was not wet, it was not like rain at all, and when I looked up, I saw the drops or flakes or whatever they were falling from a grey lilac cloud, vibrating and shimmering in cascades of different hues. The effect was such that it felt like a blessing was raining down upon me and sanctifying the ground. In the same way that flowers in an earthly garden are invigorated by rain, I too felt invigorated, but what was even more thrilling was the fact that there was something up there and it seemed to care about me. This was a different world altogether. Often, other dimensional environments appeared to be more or less copies of the earth. Here, the flowers had an essential power and vitality that made me feel that they were at the very essence of worldly plants, which were only pale reflections of these and could never reach such exuberance of self-expression. 42 After I left the garden, I came into a street. Some strange-looking vehicles went past without any identifiable form of propulsion. A man passed by on a bicycle and looking at me as if I had arrived from another planet, which to all intents and purposes I had. A few hundred yards further on, I bumped into a couple and asked them if they could tell me where I was. The woman burst out laughing and pointed at me, saying that she did not meet people in their dressing gown very often. To my astonishment, I realized that I was indeed in my dressing gown, and I was wearing slippers as well. Her partner grinned brightly at me. I felt embarrassed and made a powerful effort of will to change my attire, only to find that they were both doubled over with laughter, and when I looked at myself again, I saw that I was stark naked. Resigning myself to the fact that I had no influence over my looks, I decided to let go of my embarrassments and instead to enjoy the beautiful day. The couple finally introduced themselves and told me they were Mr. and Mrs. Peterson and that they lived in Surrey. I persuaded them to give me their address so I could check it out on my return, but our conversation was interrupted when other members of their family appeared on the scene. One of them was introduced to me as Michael. From that moment, the attention of the group started to focus on other things. Their awareness appeared to be slipping away into some kind of thought or dream world. Once more I tried to catch the attention of the woman by tapping on her shoulder. "Try not to see this as a dream," I said. "This is real. Wake up. You can do whatever you wish." She smiled at me, but I knew she had already drifted away into her own dream world. I gave her a gentle kiss on the cheek and said goodbye. Then she disappeared, following her husband who had already walked on with the other members of their family. After returning to physical consciousness, I kept my eyes shut and ran through what I had just witnessed in order to impress it on my brain. At the same time, I became aware again of my mother's house and saw her husband sitting at the table drinking coffee while hearing in the background a Beatles song coming from the radio. For a moment I pondered whether I should return, but I decided to wake up. When I looked around, I realized the furniture in the room had been moved and the window was in a different position. It was another false awakening. Then I heard music again. It came from the radio in our bedroom, and when I finally opened my eyes, Julia handed me a real cup of tea and told me it was time to get up. On one such occasion, I was leaning over the banister of a small pedestrian bridge over a small stream. I was fascinated by the sound of the running water and watched with fascination the ripples of the waves. I was daydreaming, lost in my thoughts. Then the most curious thing happened to me. I became aware of my situation, but was unable to tell whether I was in my physical body or in a dream. There was no indication that told me I was not physically awake somewhere in Cissbury Park in Watford, where we around that time the opportunities for visiting other dimensions came hard and fast. There was almost an expectation before I went to sleep at night that I could travel into other dimensions simply by closing my eyes. On occasion I took liberties by visiting the places which appealed most to me with their fantastic sceneries. I would conjure up a glass sphere as a means of transport and drift like a soap bubble over endless stretches of paradise. At times I even abandoned my waking consciousness and allowed myself to be taken away into dream, ending up with no recollection of the events I had witnessed. Next headline: How to Be a Ghost and an Hallucination. 5th of November 1978. Many times I found myself in a situation where I wasn't sure whether I was dealing with real people on the physical dimension to whom I appeared as a ghost, or people in the parallel world who also were not fully aware of my presence and were spooked when I appeared suddenly as some form of apparition. It is said that while operating on a higher dimensional consciousness that you can still experience life on the next level down, either on the physical level or on the next level down from your current one. In either case, the inhabitants would not be aware of your presence. In the following experience, I made another strange discovery, that it is possible to dream in a dream or even to daydream in a dream. I was unfamiliar and that I was in another, lived at that time. It was only that the place had no recollection of getting there to the told dimension having a lucid dream. There is, of course, an easy test. The flying test: if you can lift off the ground, you are definitely having a dream, but this didn't occur to me for a moment. Instead, I focused on a small metal screw which fixed a wooden plank to the bridge. It was staggering how much detail I could see. I could make out little scratches and minute dents on the metal, and I could only conclude that such random marks could be there only as a result of physical decay and consequently could only exist on planet Earth. But the fact that I could hover above the ground made up my mind that I was definitely out of my body. I crossed the bridge, which led to a scruffy backyard. Part of the ground was muddy and the house at the other end looked derelict. I was tempted to go through the house, but I found it too distracting, so I walked around it and along a path which led to a road 200 yards further on. Just then two cats jumped into my path and then ran away from me. I found it curious that they had seen me. As I reached the road, I saw a young girl of about 7 riding her bike. She saw me and looked rather startled and a little anxious. When I looked down at myself, I saw that I was dressed in a quavering and misty white gown, translucent like dense fog. Seeing myself like this, I felt anxious to calm the girl's alarm in the most gentle, loving and positive way I could muster. "Don't be afraid," I said, "I am quite harmless. I am a little bit scared because you look like a ghost," she said. "That's because I am a ghost. Look what I can do," I said. With that I took a great leap into the air. This did not calm her anxiety. She looked very alarmed. I explained to her that this was nothing unusual and was in fact quite natural. I told her that she did the same thing when she went to sleep at night, that she left her body, and that she too appeared like a ghost to people who were sensitive. She seemed to understand and felt reassured. I conjured up a deep felt sensation of love which I directed towards her with a great energy push. Her face lit up in a big smile and she rode off. Seconds later I woke up in my bed. I would have given anything to hear her side of that story, if she even had won. It seemed that I was on a physical level appearing as a ghost to a young girl whose senses were still open and her mind still unconditioned. I wondered whether she would tell her parents that she had seen a ghost, and then her parents would smile, thinking how great it was that she had such a vivid imagination. Next headline, September 1978. I was standing in the middle of a wide open field when I became conscious in my dream. A man next to me pointed towards a bright blue sky at strange flying shapes. My first impression was that they could have been flying saucers. I wanted to make absolutely sure that this was not a dream, and I told myself to be fully awake. My state of mind couldn't be any clearer. This was simply normal wakefulness, not more, not less. Only time realization that I was awake in a different world altogether made it something really special. I recall that before I woke up in this strange dimension the scene was very much the same, even the people, further proof that although we may think we are dreaming, we could actually have traveled into another dimension. Meanwhile, the strange flying objects sailed peacefully across the sky at what I estimated to be about 20 miles per hour. I, like the others, studied them with fascination. They were a white pearly color, and they had a disc-like base arranged in steps getting smaller towards the top. The uppermost disc carried a square column with an onion-shaped tip. The whole object struck me as rather phallic and not like something which could easily fly under any physical law of nature. I turned to the man who had pointed the objects out to me and asked him who were flying the crafts. "They are women, but an alien species," he replied. "They use all kinds of different flying machines." 47, Death Rays. 11th of December 1978. 3 months later I was dreaming about alien creatures from another planet. They were very odd looking, quite unattractive, small and plump with a dirty looking dark skin. They had little heads connected to their stunted bodies with hardly any neck. They appeared to have just a single eye, or rather a visual organ, because it didn't look like an eye at all. What senses they used or how they would perceive their environment I had no idea. Their mouth and nose formed a single organ. The more I studied and stared at them, the more vivid the experience became, and all of a sudden I was wide awake in my dream. Again my wakefulness had not altered the events of my dream. Encouraged by my newfound freedom, I started a conversation via _telepathy, which appeared more natural than using spoken words. They were not unfriendly at all, and it was easy to communicate with them without ever uttering a syllable. They were quite susceptible to thought-based, nonverbal communication. We exchanged our views, my vision zoomed into it closely. I could make out 4 alien creatures staring out of the large portholes, but one of them was unmistakably human. It was a woman. Out of pure curiosity, I said I would be interested in boarding the spacecraft to talk to these strangers. I was unaware that this could cause any danger. Another spectator heard me and came closer. "This is not a wise thing to do," he said, "because when they take off it is unlikely that you will come back, especially someone with your attachments." With that he pointed to my umbilical cord, which hung limply from my stomach and disappeared into the ground. Before this I couldn't have imagined any risks and felt confident that all that was needed was an effort of will to get back into my body and wake up, no matter how far I was away from it. But now I wasn't so sure. Despite the warning, curiosity prevailed and I willed myself on board the craft. I didn't quite reach it and woke up in my bed. Next headline, had I been saved? I asked one of them about his race and whether they were at a more civilized stage than us humans. He told me that their race was just as ignorant and selfish as mankind. There was an element of humor in his comment and it endeared him to me. He convinced me that there would be no harm coming with him to visit their planet because I always had the option to wake up if I didn't find it agreeable. Again, I detected a hint of a laugh in his comment, which made me chuckle. I couldn't even remember how I got there, but I knew for sure that suddenly I was on their home planet. There were many more of them now. I was surrounded by a whole group as we marched towards a large building. The architecture of the structure was something I had not encountered before, but not so unusual that it could not have been thought up by humans. As we approached the entrance, we stopped. I became aware of some form of conflict. They all stopped and started debating my arrival and how to proceed. I noticed an air of suspicion being directed towards me. I looked at the sky of their planet and became suddenly amazed. Clouds drifted past, but the gaps between the clouds were filled with lovely hues of color. The beauty was such that it had a reviving effect on my mind and I acquired a powerful state of wakefulness and mental alertness. When I directed my attention to the group, they were still standing in front of the great entrance to the building and still debating whether or not to go inside. I wasn't quite sure what the fuss was all about. I just stood there silently and patiently, with my face tilted to the sky, admiring the spectacle of ever-changing colors. Then I saw a ray of light, intensifying, sending its beautiful light in arcs that were getting closer to me, almost playfully, I thought. When I traced its origin, I noticed that it did not come from the sky at all but was cast from a window high up in the building. I noticed that it was a scan ray becoming wider, scanning the area until finally it reached me. The effect was blatantly unpleasant. The ray remained focused on me and I noticed its frequency changing. I felt heavy pulses coming from the window and wave after wave of colorful light. Gradually I began to ache, and when I noticed that my hosts had abandoned my company, I became very alarmed and sought shelter in a basement nearby. I felt that the ray had the power to destroy me if I didn't get out. I tried to get back, but my energy was sapped and I couldn't remember how to wake up in my bed. I tried to lift off the ground, but my flight was very unsteady. Out of despair, I called for help. Almost instantly, I felt a cocoon thrown around me, protecting me, and I woke up in my bed. Once again, I had no ill effects. Next headline, past lives, ancient crimes and misdemeanors. Death of a petty tyrant, 1st of March 1980. I was still dreaming when I walked through my hometown in Germany, but when I realized that I was dreaming, my consciousness sprang instantly into life with its customary excitement. For a moment I wondered whether there was any good reason for investigating my surroundings, but I couldn't see any. I decided instead to spiritualize my mind by trying out my new mantra, which I had received previously during deep meditation. I looked up into the sky and repeated the word. I used the word during normal meditation while sitting in my meditation chair, but then it was hardly more than pinning my attention to something to keep my mind from wandering. Here it was altogether different. The moment the word rolled out of my mind towards the blue sky above me, I realized it had an overwhelming power. It made the whole world around me vibrate and the ground shake as if during a big earthquake. It felt as if a vortex had opened within the blue sky and I was being sucked into it. For a moment I considered how I could control this force and whether I could use it to transport me into a distant galaxy, maybe into another universe altogether, and I focused on a single bright star which appeared in the now dark indigo sky. At this moment the force weakened and dropped me back to the ground. It became clear to me immediately that I myself had cut off the power by my idle indulgence, rather than by allowing the force of the mantra to take me to its natural domain. 51 When I looked around again, I found myself floating in a dark room, drifting towards the ceiling. A foot in front of my eyes, there was an elaborate, even lavish ceiling molding. I knew immediately that this was the master bedroom of a large mansion. I had an eerie feeling of recollection. I knew this house very well, and just by looking at the ceiling, I remembered every room.